Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's edition of HFS Unfiltered. We are going to talk all about Global Capability Centers, or GCCs, the topic that's dominating the narrative, at least in India. And I'm delighted to have a super special guest and a good friend with me, Mohua Sen Gupta. She's the head of Novartis Corporate Center in India. Welcome to the show, Mohua.
Thank you. Thank you, Saurabh.
So Mohua, let's start with your journey as a GCC leader. Tell us about, you know, what would you say are your top three moments or achievements that stand out for you?
So my GCC journey had started quite late. I come from the banking side, and then I moved to IT services, and I started in GCCs only in 2021 as the global head of GCC for Mashreq Bank in Dubai, which is headquartered in Dubai. Now, even between 21 and 24, there are many moments that I can talk about, but let me talk about just a few. So definitely the topmost would be that me sitting in India, when I took over the Mashreq role, the thing that attracted me the most was that I was asked to start a legal entity, a full-fledged GCC setup in Pakistan and one in Egypt. Now, I had never worked in either of those two countries, and I knew that as an Indian, I would hardly ever get a chance to work in Pakistan. And you won't believe the entire setup was done from India, led from India, of course, with support from the headquarters. And the vendors that we had identified locally in Pakistan. And the entire thing was managed from India. And my example is, if somebody sitting in India can start and run a center in Pakistan, anything is possible in the corporate world. It's until the head of the Pakistan center came on board, it was all managed from India. So it was, that was, to me, that's one of the most defining moments in my corporate career. The second would be, typically the GCCs used to be very ops tech and maybe contact center heavy. And there was generally a reluctance to move many of the high-end roles. I happen to come from a space which is IT services, and our typical goal was always to bring anything, we can do anything, right? That's the typical IT services mindset. And so when I started, while the GCC was only an ops and tech center, when I left, every single group of the bank had a substantial representation. Of course, it needed a lot of support from the headquarters, a lot of support from the senior leadership, and a lot of support from the team, because they were ready to take up all kinds of challenge, because it involves a lot, right? There's a lot of regulators involved. There are the skill sets, of course, is probably the easiest to find in India. I mean, that's the least of our problem. But to move very core functions, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of, I would say, conviction on the part of a lot of people. So that was the second. And the third, that is not specifically for GCCs, but how much can be done remotely. I happened to join the GCC world very much in the middle of COVID. So much was possible to do remotely that we actually became a primarily remote GCC at that point. I mean, Mashreq Bank at that point. Both my Pakistan and Egypt centers were completely remote, and India also was 70% remote. So I would say those were the three most defining, and also because I was probably just starting out my GCC journey.
Yeah, no, that is fascinating, right? Setting up a center in Pakistan and Egypt, sitting in India, you know, moving from a bank to a pharma. We could have an entire hour-long conversation on each of these, Mohua. But tell me, while you've been in the GCC world for about 4 years, you've been in the IT services world for a fairly long time. And you know, the operating model, and you sort of alluded to this in your opening comments, that the operating model has changed a little bit, right? It is no longer just, you know, cost arbitrage, you know, cheap labor, you know, it's moved way beyond that. How have you seen the operating model, both for IT services and GCCs, because they're two sides of the same coin in a way, changing and the value proposition changing, as especially in India?
So yes, definitely two sides of the same coin. And I have seen the journey from for the last, 20 years, the GCC journey and GCC and IT services relationship journey, I would say. So initial days, it was, I would say they were more competing with each other. And it has, the business model was that GCCs were kind of another outsourcing option for the headquarters. That's how it was being seen in the, say, 20 years back. And this is, the name used to be Captive, which is a very no-no word today. I mean, we don't talk about that. But that's how it was. And most of the time, the business head at the headquarters would probably ask the GCC leadership that, why you and why not XYZ, who's an IT services firm? What do I get from you? Or your cost is more or less, or even if it's less, they have better people. So it was always a competition. I've recently written an article also on this, that I refer to it as the parent would ask that, how are you better than your cousin? So that from there, I think the relationship has substantially changed, and the change is more driven from the GCC side, because the whole insecurity of the GCCs have kind of gone away. GCCs have become much more ingrained into the overall business or the overall scheme of things for the parent organization or the main organization. So it's currently, it is no longer seen as a completely separate unit. It's part of the same organization. So this whole insecurity that the GCCs had has gone away. And because it has gone away, today the GCC leaders they're no longer competing with the IT services companies. So it is more a hybrid delivery model. And the other thing that has changed as a result of this GCCs becoming sort of part of the main or primary organization is that many a times, if not the main decision maker, many a times the main decision maker is also based in the GCCs. Sometimes, if not the main GCC decision maker, the big influencers are sitting in the GCCs. So the whole insecurity part has gone out of the window, and the GCC leader is actually responsible for delivering the work piece. It can be through internal employees or through IT services or any other service provider. So the whole competition part between the two companies have given way to a more collaborative relationship. And primarily, I think it has been driven from the GCCs. The change has happened in the GCC world, and that has made this relationship evolve. That's how I see it.
I could not agree more. And by the way, I loved your article, because it's so on point with what we are seeing on the ground here as well. Because I think this construct of third party versus GCC and was an or construct. We would either have this or this. I think the real construct should be this and that, right? It has to be third party and GCC, because that's where you can, as an organization, you can get the best of both worlds, right? Why do you have to drive this competition? You have to think of it in an ecosystem sort of a mindset. And I think you're absolutely right. That's been such a positive change. I think there's still room to grow there. I think not everybody's thinking that way. There is still room to grow there, but I think that's a very important distinction of the operating model. But let's also talk about one of the hottest topics right now, you know, what my role has been reduced to becoming an AI help desk these days, Mohua, given the amount of given the amount of conversations that are, you know, everybody has a question on it. And honestly, I don't have all the answers, but let me ask you a question. Are you excited or nervous or a bit of both about AI as you look at your own operations?
So in general, I would say it is a nervous excitement as far as AI is concerned. Doesn't matter whether it's GCCs or wherever it is. And I'll say why excitement and why nervousness. See, excitement to me is because, see, the human capital will get released a lot if we can truly utilize the AI's technology. Now, I know many people see it as, oh, AI will take away the jobs, but I'm not really worried about that because, see, this is exactly the mindset when, say, 20, 25 years back or 30 years back, the computers came and everybody thought, okay, people's jobs will go, computers will do everything. That didn't happen. I mean, the jobs just evolved. So I'm very hopeful that with AI being utilized properly, people will do, human capital will be released for really high-end, innovative, transformative work. So to me, that's very exciting. The nervousness comes from the fact that in AI, a lot of the ethical boundary gets very blurry. And many a times, I'm very scared to get into a space or talk about AI in a space where the regulations are not strong enough to ensure that there will be, that boundary will not be crossed. So that, to me, is the biggest worry, that ethical boundary. The second thing is, with the entry of AI, the whole space of fraud and hacking and all of that has just gone multifold. I remember talking to a friend from the fraud prevention group, and after this whole AI and Gen AI and all of that has come, and he said that I cannot tell you how interesting my job has become, and I can literally, we are all up 24 hours because we don't know from which part of the bank or the organization these kind of, what kind of fraud is going to come and hit us. So we are all, our antennas are all up. So that is the other scary piece as far as, I mean, the nervousness is concerned. And we see it in everyday life, right? Today, all of us are experiencing some kind of scam or fraud or at least attempt to fraud on a daily basis, right? It's, many of us have become, oh, okay, another call has come or something like that. So that's what, I mean, I think it's nervous excitement for everybody pretty much in whichever space we talk about as far as AI is concerned.
Yeah, I know, you're right. It's, everybody's excited and anxious at the same time. But I think to the point that you were making, AI is to work what calculators were to math, right? You can fight it as much, but you've got to use it, right? And we've got to figure out how to deal with ethical and all these boundaries, because, you know, while AI has somewhat graduated from school, there are other technologies which are still in middle school. Like, let's take quantum computing. At some point of time, that will graduate. Then what are we going to do with that, right? I think AI will be our savior too for the fraud and all the privacy related risks from quantum. You can't put 80,000 people to, you know, make you quantum secure. You'll have to use AI, you know. So I think you're absolutely right. But I think it's also right to be nervous and anxious about it, because otherwise we won't put the right boundary conditions for AI. And yeah. So tell me, you know, while the buzz has been around AI and it has sort of taken all the space from any conversation, there are still very interesting technologies that we've stopped talking about. You know, take blockchain as an example, and I know you're passionate about it, so I wanted to bring that into the conversation. So tell me about you know, clearly, I wrote an article where I said blockchain is not dead. You know, maybe the hype is, but the technology still lives and the value proposition still is very, very important. Tell me a little bit of your perspective on blockchain, you know, in your industry and, you know, where you think that's going.
See, to me, blockchain is a fantastic technology. I mean, yes, it has not taken off. It has not been used. And talk about death by POC. Blockchain has also seen that a lot. And now we don't talk about it. But there are two challenges. And I think blockchain still has a huge potential. But the two primary challenges why blockchain has not become as pervasive as it could have been is number one, it's a difficult technology. It's not very intuitive. Like Gen AI, I can talk about Gen AI to my grandma and she would probably understand, I mean, at least the basic concept of it, that, okay, it's just nothing but you type it up what you want to do. Blockchain is not that. It takes all of us time to understand the technology, and I've done enough and more. I tried to simplify it and done some courses for people. I've talked about it a lot in different events. And it is not an easy concept. It takes a lot of effort to understand it. It's not very intuitive. But more than that, the reason I think blockchain has not really taken off is because there's no first mover's advantage. And I think we have discussed this at some point, that there is no first mover's advantage in blockchain. You can get more benefit from blockchain only when there are many people, many nodes, many people have gone on to the chain. Huh? So if I take again, banking comes to me more naturally, I'll take a more banking and a very simplistic example, because this is an area where we had delivered. I had in my past, we had delivered projects and real projects, not POCs, is in the KYC space. It's a very low hanging fruit for blockchain because this is data. It needs a lot of auditability. It needs a lot of, there is security is very, very critical because it's key customer data. But at the same time, there is no need for every organization to collect the KYC data every single time because it's cost. I mean, there is a cost associated with it. So this is an area, this is a space where blockchain can easily be very handy. But when will it be handy? When, say, 100 banks, 100 insurance companies, multiple, retailers, multiple pharma companies, they're all on the blockchain. If they are not, if I'm the only organization who's using the blockchain and who's on that, I have no advantage. I might as well collect my own data. Why invest in blockchain? And I think that has stood in the way. And unless there is some regulatory push or governmental push that, okay, let's do this, take this use case and let's get all of them, all the organizations, or at least a certain part, incentivize the organizations to get onto it, I don't think it would happen. It's like the EVs. We know it's good, but it needed the incentive of tax break in order for people to get onto EVs. And I think now, after 5 years, even if that tax break is not there, people would just, not even 5 years, I think now itself, we are understanding the benefit of EVs. So we really need the regulators and the lawmakers to step in order for blockchain to kick off and take off. And I think you had hit, in your article, you had hit the nail on its head, that blockchain brings the ethical, ensures the ethical boundaries, the security, etc. AI is a technology which can potentially compromise it. So if there is a way to marry the two, it would be a perfect solution. So yes, it's simplistic, but then I think there is a huge potential.
I think so too. You know, one because I was amongst the first analysts to start covering enterprise blockchain. And I think you're so right when you say it's a complicated technology, because I've been looking at this, like I've seen hundreds of demos, you know, from service providers, from organizations, etc. and you need like five screens. You have to look at five different screens to really understand what's going on, right? Because as you know, there are multiple nodes and you have to figure this thing out. It's not simple, right? I've tried to explain it to my 11-year-old daughter and she sort of rolls her eyes and sort of moves on.
And then the other thing... better than us.
Oh, fair point.
I can guarantee you she understands it better than you.
that she understands everything better than me. But I think one more challenge with blockchain, Mohua, is that people have started to equate blockchain to Bitcoin, right? And I think that brings in emotions, good or bad, with it, and they start to look at, okay, so what does this mean? And I think enterprise blockchain needs to be looked at it in a different way than this. But you're absolutely right. It still holds so much promise. If you can marry it with AI, then I think the best of both worlds can be achieved. The biggest thing that we are lacking in today's society is trust, and blockchain inherently brings trust to us. But talking of trust, Mohua, we can't have a conversation around GCCs and not talk about talent and their trust with our IT services industry. You know, and talking about kids, you know, when I graduated way back, my parents were proud of me because I joined an IT services company and I was quite happy as well. Now I look at my nieces and nephews in India, and they're not unhappy, but they're not jumping up and down, right? They want to join a startup or they want to join a technology company. You know, this is our industry is not at the top for the best and the brightest in India. So how do we make our industry sexy again, right? How do we make this sexy again for our talent?
Okay, see, the reason it was such a hot and sexy thing when we came out of college is because of two reasons. See, when globalization, you were probably after, a little bit later, but when I came out of college, globalization just happened. And it was the first time that the IT services as an organization has started to evolve. And suddenly this whole interest from the global economy, the rest of the world, where they started bringing in, suddenly everybody discovered this, okay, there are so many engineers who have come out who are as good, but at a much lower cost. So it was a pure cost arbitrage model. And the jobs came, and it was not just the piece of work. It was the whole package that made it look very sexy. One, the salaries were high. Two, innumerable foreign trips came as part of the package, because you are having to travel every now and then to the customer's office. Three, you are experiencing a world which is something that your parents or your surrounding, very few people had experience in the past or are experiencing at that point in time also. So it was the whole uniqueness of the IT services, and IT services happened to be the first ones who came into India after globalization. So that was the whole glitz about IT services. What do the kids, and today's kids, when I say kids, the ones who are coming out of college, they have grown up with all this. I was excited to see the first mobile phone, which was like this big piece of something, which if you throw would probably kill a couple of people. But today's kids are growing up with everything. When I was born, I didn't have any device probably at home other than the phone. And when I got my first computer, my friend said, wow, see, now our kids will come who will have a computer at home. And these are those humongous boxes, which were like home desktops that we had. My first computer when I was doing my MBA. Now, today's kids are born with 10 different devices at home, each person with 5-6 different devices. So their expectation from life is very different. for them, what was exciting to us, they are as kids. See, I have made my first foreign trip when I was doing my, I just finished my master's, or I was going to do my master's, so I went to US. That was my first foreign trip. My daughter has already probably traveled to 50 countries. So a foreign trip, or getting, buying a fancy dress when she's traveling, all these things don't attract them. They are driving good cars. So what they are looking for are very different. They, one, they look for very core, good quality work. And that comes, that they get, that whole innovation or transformation, that kind of attraction is very big for them. For us, that was a up the way up there. We didn't even think, start thinking that far. Huh? Today's kids, they are looking at organizations who are aligning with them in the CSR goals, who are aware of sustainability. So it's only because Indian economy has evolved and come to a place where our children today have the luxury of looking at those things. For us, we didn't have. We were looking at very, very mundane. Our kids will not even think, we'll call them cheap. I mean, so you're getting a higher salary. So what if you're, I won't even think of, I can't imagine going into an interview and asking that. So how, what do you do for your CSR? Or are you, how, what's your sustainability score? But today when we interview, we get those questions. So it's a completely different world. And in that, yes, IT services or GCCs are not the kind of work we do. While there are pieces of really good work that is being done, it is also true that a lot of low-hanging fruit is being delivered from GCCs or IT services, because it's just the, it's not for anything else. It's just the nature of being. Everybody cannot be doing transformational work. There has to be some mundane work that has to be done. Whereas in startup, it's all about innovation. It's all about, okay, something new. In a product company also, it's like that. And the other thing is, we all needed the security of a job. Today's kids won't, so we would think twice before joining a startup. Yes, it can do very well. It can go down under. Today's kids don't think about it because they have, they know their back is covered. I mean, yeah, so this startup will fail. I'll join somewhere else.
I completely agree. And there's so much to unpack there, Mohua, that I think we need a Joe Rogan style 3-hour conversation, not this 30 minute quick chat to unpack this. But well, let me, before I let you go, I think it'll be fascinating to hear from you. If there was one wish that could come true, if there was one magic wand and you could, which could grant you one wish, what would that be?
Okay. So see, with respect to GCCs, I think if it's a wish, I would say, first of all, the name GCC should change, because this whole, in this name comes that us versus them, even though the mindset has evolved quite a bit, I think the name is pulling us down. The other thing I would say is, and with this name, what I really would wish to see is that the GCCs are truly integrated with the part of the organization. It's just like if a branch office of, say, XYZ company is considering themselves as it's a branch of XYZ in a different country, why can't the GCC be exactly that? I know there are some legal entity boundaries. We have to set up a separate legal entity. We have to do when it comes to the regulatory things. But I think those are more the detailing. We have come a long, long, long way. But as you said, we still have a way to go. And I think it should not take too long. It took us 30 years to come thus far. I think the next phase that we have to overcome, I think it should not take us more than 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, no, that's, I completely echo that thought. I think we've changed the names from, you talked about captive, then we started to call them global in-house centers. Now, because who wanted to work for a captive, right? Nobody. So you call them GICs, now you call them GCCs. But I agree, you know, it should be just an integral part of the organization. Yeah, but I think beyond the name, it's the narrative. that needs to change as well, right? And I think
exactly.
And I think that's what we are lacking. So it's not the legal T&Cs and the legal mumbo jumbo, but the narrative has to change. It's not just a delivery center. It's a piece of your organization which is delivering value, you know, doing all kinds of work. And I think by labeling it, we are somehow creating a, you know, this is a separated sort of organization.
If I may add, it is also, I also believe that it's a big part of it is in our mindset. Most GCC people have a service delivery mindset. With that service delivery mindset, it's very difficult to engulf yourself in that I'm a part of this organization. It's as much my decision. I'm not just delivering to someone else's requirement. So that mindset is also a big impediment. It's all of this has to move, but I think we have come a long way. It's just that last bit we have to overcome.
So here's to changing the GCC mindset. Mohua, thank you so much. This was a fascinating conversation. We should do it again and explore some other topics. But thanks a lot for spending some time with us. I hope whoever is listening to this will take something from it. I at least took a lot. So thanks again, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too, and always lovely talking to you, Saurav. Thank you so much. Thank you.